In the lead up to the 2008 presidential election, we've invited all the candidates to speak with us and with you about their campaigns. Today, our series continues with Republican candidate Mike Huckabee, former governor of Arkansas and a Southern Baptist who says his faith guides his politics. Outside his home state, he's best known for his rapid weight loss after he was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes in 2003 and his subsequent efforts to fight obesity. If you have questions for Governor Huckabee about Iraq, the economy, health care, or his faith and politics, give us a call. 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is talk@npr.org. And Governor Huckabee joins us now by phone from his campaign headquarters in Little Rock, Arkansas. And thanks very much for being with us today.
Well, thank you, Neil. Pleasure to be with you today.
And I'd like to start with the biggest issue today, the fourth anniversary, the start of the invasion of Iraq. We just marked that. Support for the war is sinking. As president, what would you do about Iraq?
The first thing that I would do is starting even now, and that is getting the other nations that are in that neighborhood to participate in the discussion of how to bring some level of stability. A week ago Sunday, 13 nations gathered in Baghdad, and it was one of the more optimistic signs that they're finally beginning to understand that if Iraq does go up in flames, they're going to get burned first, and they can't afford to have a completely unraveling situation there. But clearly, in addition to getting them militarily and financially involved in bringing some stability, the U.S. has to make it very clear to the Iraqi government that we're not going to be there forever. They do have to get control of their own security, bring their people together to quit fighting each other, and begin rebuilding their country.
Under what conditions would you ask U.S. troops to leave? Under what conditions would you say they ought to continue to stay there and continue to support the Iraqi government?
The luxury of being a candidate rather than the actual president is that it's easy to make any kind of statement one wants without having the responsibility for living with it. And I think I found that out as a candidate and as a governor for 10.5 years when everybody had an easy answer for everything I had to decide on. I don't have the intelligence report sitting in front of me. The one thing I would tell you, we can't put a specific date and say, this is it, we're going to walk out on this date, because this is not a football game with a clock. This is a baseball game in the sense that it's got to be won by objective rather than by time frame. And rather than say we're going to be there until and then put an arbitrary date in place, I think what we need to do is to say that we're going to keep our options open. We have to leave some ambiguity with the Iraqis. Otherwise, I fear that they're not going to take this seriously, and we'll have to make it clear that there are certain objectives and expectations that we have. We need to spell those out in terms of stopping the civil war. They need to have a certain number of people who are now engaged in both their police force and military. Those are the types of criteria that we should be setting.
Your campaign website says you believe we're engaged in a world war. What is the best way, do you think, to fight terrorism, and at what expense to American civil liberties?
Well, first we have to understand that this is not a conventional war. We're not fighting a country. We're not fighting a group of individuals who are in uniform and who are marching together, training together. It's a world war because there are terrorists and terrorist cells in every continent, and they have one united front. It's not their nationality. It's not even their language. What unites them is a radical perversion of the Muslim religion. And I'm very definite and deliberate in speaking of this as a deliberate or as a specific perversion of the Muslim faith. The moderate Muslims have a huge responsibility to step in and step up and begin to engage this Islamic fascism, because it's going to be detrimental to any peace in the Middle East, any peace on earth, if people have as their theological basis the idea that they should destroy first Israel, the United States, and everything Western.
You were a theology student in college. You went on to become a preacher yourself, later on president of the Arkansas Baptist State Convention. Have you studied Islam?
I did study it in both college and seminary, and that's why I think I can comfortably say that the jihadist, the true radical Islamist, are not representative of the vast majority of people of the Islamic faith.
We're speaking with Governor Mike Huckabee, former governor of the state of Arkansas, hopes to be the Republican presidential candidate in 2008. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, or send us an email, talk@npr.org. We got this email from Nate in Fort Mitchell, Kentucky. Governor Huckabee, your candidacy and the message of your campaign in regard to religion and politics seems to have a flavor to it that is different than many of those of Republican candidates, both currently and in years past. Some might refer to it as more progressive. Do you associate the lack of support you've received thus far from religious leaders on the right to be due to, for example, regarding abortion, your emphasis on the well-being of the child beyond just birth?
I think one of the failures of those of us, and I conclude myself, in the pro-life movement is that we left the appearance and the impression that our only interest was in a child during the gestation period. Well, that's simply inadequate. If we're really pro-life, then we care about that child having access to decent drinking water and a safe neighborhood and a school in which he can learn. We need to be concerned about the neighborhood in which that child plays, and hopefully that child has access to affordable health care. I think that's very much consistent with a true and pure pro-life message, to say that we only care about a child from conception and then through his period in the birth canal is really ludicrous, and it hardly is indicative of a true pro-life position, which is that life is precious, that it should be celebrated and elevated, protected, and held up as the great treasure of our culture and civilization.
I know you didn't tussle with Nate's remarks about lack of support from the right. You are less well known, I think it's fair to say, than some of the other Republican candidates, Rudy Giuliani or Senator John McCain. What are you going to do to overcome that problem of name recognition?
I'm going to keep doing shows like yours, Neil, because long as he's
good luck
getting the message out, I think people will realize that there's room in this race for someone like myself. I like to call myself an authentic conservative. I didn't just come to it recently. But I'm not a conservative that's mad at anybody. I don't think Republicans are right all the time. I don't think Democrats are wrong all the time. I think what I bring to the race is not only a sense of conservatism of conviction, but I also bring the practical experience of having governed a state for 10.5 years, working with an overwhelming majority of the other party, and getting things done. People want results out of their government. In my book that came out early this year, Neil, called From Hope to Higher Ground, I really focus on the difference between what I call horizontal and vertical politics. Most people in politics see everything horizontally, left, right, Democrat, Republican, conservative, liberal. The problem is the average American isn't sitting around thinking about life from the horizontal perspective. They're looking at life from a vertical perspective, and what they want to know is, will this leader I vote for lead me and, more importantly, lead my children's future to higher ground? If they believe that, they're willing to forego maybe some pieces of your platform they don't agree with, because what they're really looking for is a leader who has vision, optimism, and a spirit in which there's an understanding that America is not great because of its government. It's great because of the innate sense of its people, who are resilient and able to come through just about anything, whether it's the Great Depression or World War II.
Let's get some callers on the line. This is Todd. Todd's with us from Las Vegas.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead, please. You're on the air.
Well, my question for Governor Huckabee was, out here in the West, we have a lot of complex issues that involve land and water and things like that. And as most folks know, this part of the country was settled by Latter-day Saints such as myself. I was just wondering how Governor Huckabee would sway Latter-day Saints in this country to vote for a Republican other than Mitt Romney. And I'm also a Democrat, and I'm just wondering if there's a movement started elsewhere that we could lovingly call Romney Democrat.
I'm not sure what that would be, the Romney Democrats.
Somebody from Massachusetts, maybe. I don't know.
Could be. Maybe that's what we would call Huckabee Democrats in Arkansas, because in this state, 86% of elected officials are Democrats, so I certainly had to overcome the odds when I became only the fourth Republican elected to a statewide office in nearly 150 years during my election as lieutenant governor and then subsequently election as governor. If I understood the caller's question, it had to do with some of the issues of the West.
Yeah.
Did I understand that correctly,
Nick? I think so, yes.
One of the issues that's very critical to the West is the fact that so much of Western states' property is tied up in federal government ownership, which means that not only do many of those states struggle with a tax base since they don't have it for property tax and therefore education, but it also means that the federal government is regulating huge amounts of the issues that touch their state. This becomes critically important during times of wildfires when they're unable to do some of the management tools that would really help to either prevent or fight those fires. So that's an issue that I always heard my colleagues who were governors from the West passionately talk about. And frankly, as it is with most issues in the ranks of governors, it really was rarely about Democrats and Republicans. It was about good policy and bad policy.
We're speaking with former governor of Arkansas, Mike Huckabee. He's hoping to be the Republican presidential candidate in 2008. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Mark on the line. Mark with us from Memphis, Tennessee.
Yes. My question is, I wonder what role the governor thinks his personal faith should play in a country where a separation of church and state is mandated by law.
I think it's important for a person to be honest about his or her faith, and that's why I've been honest about mine. People ask me, does my faith influence my decisions? And I say to them, quite frankly, no, it really drives them. And it's very important that people understand. If you want to know what makes me tick, understand my faith. I think it's one of the reasons that when people say, gee, you have this perception that we ought to be interested in children beyond the birth canal, that's because of my faith. It's because of my faith that I really do believe that as Christians as well as citizens, we have a responsibility to take good care of the environment that's not ours. We don't own it. We just get to use it, but we don't have a right to abuse it. We shouldn't worship it. We shouldn't elevate it beyond life itself. But we ought to practice the old Boy Scout rule, and that is leave your campsite in better shape than you found it. That's not only a good position to take environmentally as a conservationist, which I do, but I think it's a good position to take because if I understand that this world was created by a creator, then I've got a responsibility to manage it carefully, wisely, and pass it on in as good, if not better, shape. It worries me when someone is asked the question about his or her faith, and their answer is something like, oh, I don't let my faith influence my decisions at all. Because when that person says that, what they're really saying is, my faith is so insignificant, so inconsequential in my life, that it really doesn't mean a whole lot. I'd rather a person be like Pete Stark of California, who last week announced that he was an atheist. Someone asked me if I was concerned about it. I said, no, I'd much rather a person be honest about his atheism, than to be dishonest about a Christianity that he claims to behold, but he doesn't really live it and doesn't really believe it because he never practices it.
Well, does professing a faith in Christianity, does it give you any special privileges as far as the government's concerned, do you think?
Whatsoever. No, I think that what we should do is recognize that our nation was founded on the idea that faith should never be prohibited or preferred. Those are the basic tenets of the First Amendment, that no one's faith should have preference over another, no one's faith should have prohibition against another. And if a person wants to have no faith, they're free to practice no faith. Any faith that is coerced is not faith at all. It's the equivalent of a spiritual, and I'll use this term, and I know it's a rather graphic one, but it's really the equivalent of a spiritual rape. It is a relationship forced upon somebody. That's not faith. Faith is always out of the volition of the person who embraces it, and therefore it's most critical that we never try to impose our faith. We certainly ought to share it. We certainly ought to be quick and eager to discuss it and to debate it, to explain it, but to force it, absolutely not. That would be completely, frankly, polar opposite of the definition of what real faith is about.
Thanks for the call, Mark.
Thank you.
Here's an email from Dana in San Francisco. How would you solve the immigration crisis as president? Do you favor discontinuing the policy of automatic citizenship by birth, a policy which is not followed by any other modern industrialized nation, a policy which is not necessarily supported by the 14th Amendment? And do you feel NAFTA and the other trade agreements are unconstitutional since these treaties were not passed by the required two-thirds majority of the Senate? So it's a broad range of issues relating to immigration and free trade with Canada and Mexico.
generally, free trade is a good thing, but it's not free if it's not fair. And our problem is that in many cases, we're practicing a level of free trade that's anything but fair, because we're subscribing to principles of the WTO that other nations aren't. We are living up to not only issues of how we treat workers and how we pay workers and issues of how well a company protects the environment, while other countries are not doing anything to create a level playing field. So it's critical to have a free and open trade, because that actually builds jobs for us. But it doesn't build jobs. In fact, it takes jobs from us when we don't force other countries to play by the same rules we're playing by. As for the border, I think we ought to secure it with a fence, whether it's electronic or physical, because I go to an airport in Little Rock, get on an airplane here, and even though everyone in that airport who's working the desk, whether it's the SkyCap or the TSA agents or the gate agents or the ticket counter people, they know who I am because they call me by name, but I still have to walk through those barriers of security, show my photo ID, take my shoes off, put my laptop in one of those little plastic tubs, and occasionally still get patted down to make sure that I'm not going to be a threat to anybody. Now, here's my point. If as a taxpaying citizen that they clearly know who I am, if I have to go through several layers of security just to get a seat on an airplane, it's not unreasonable that someone who comes here from another country would have to show who they are, why they're coming here, where they're going, prove they don't have a communicable disease or a criminal background, and then have an orderly process through which, if we needed them in our economy,
Governor,
we'd let them in.
I'm afraid we're out of time. I know there's plenty more questions. And very quickly, do you still get to run every day while you're running for president?
Well, you bet I do. That's really important to me. I had a little knee issue after the New York Marathon, but I'm back on the road, and I'm hoping to do a fall marathon this year.
Governor Mike Huckabee, this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.